Now, we're joined on the programme by the director of On Green On Theatre in Letterkenny, Patricia McBride. Hi, Patricia.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
Good to have you on the show. How are you keeping?
I'm good, thanks.
All right, doesn't happen too often, but progress sometimes comes at a little bit of a price. And the theatre is closing, or has closed, until the new year for renovation works. This, I presume, has been in the planning for quite some time.
That's right, yeah, it's 5 years in the planning. We received a grant from the Department of Culture, Communications and Sport back in 2021. So the process of getting to this point where the builders are actually on site today has taken a bit of time. You know, just the tendering process for the architect-led team, the tendering for the builder, just it takes a lot of time. So we're delighted to be here now and making these renovations to the theatre.
There's a mixture of benefits here. It should become a smoother experience for those attending the theatre, but also a better space for the creatives.
Yes, that's right. I mean, there's two main elements to the project. So in terms of our customer experience, we're redesigning our box office counter, which currently doesn't meet standards of accessibility. So we will now have a wheelchair accessible counter for customers, but it also means that we have the potential then to employ someone who is a wheelchair user. And the box office itself will be closed in with glass on two sides, so it'll be a better experience for staff. Currently, when we host events in our foyer, which we do often, we have a lot of launches and different meetings there. It means that staff will be able to use the phones more freely and will be able to hear customers on the telephone without the interference from the background noise.
Hello? Hello?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, of course. And listen, I mean, obviously the building was built at a time. It's fantastic to see it becoming more accessible, not just for actually the public, but also potentially for staff too, which I think is fantastic. The second part of this, more beneficial to the performers, would you say?
Yes, absolutely. So the upper foyer in our theatre, which is currently a very underused space, and anyone who's familiar with the theatre will know that there's kind of three big voids. There's two big gaps at the window, and there's like a central space. It's a design feature, but it has made that space quite difficult to use. So the plan now is that we will fill those voids in. We will make a studio space there. It'll be a workshop space that creative people can use, that our youth theatre can use. Currently, our youth theatre are in a very small room, and you know, there's 15 children plus a facilitator in each class, so it's quite crowded in there, so they'll have a much better space to work. And for artists who are coming to the theatre, really the only space that they can use, especially if they're doing dance or movement, is the stage. And as you know, the stage is very, very busy, so it's hard to carve out time for people to do that kind of development work and rehearsals. So the new space will have like a fully sprung floor. It'll be able to be used as a very intimate studio space for 50 to 60 people to attend a performance there. And we can use that for new work, for poetry readings, things that, you know, we would find difficult to put into our main space. It wouldn't be a very friendly space for that kind of very intimate work and new work.
Yeah, of course, because certain work, it suits a smaller audience sometimes as well, or if you want to be a little bit more creative in terms of audience interaction or what have you. So that's on the first floor, is it? In behind effectively where the sound men and women might be.
Yes,
yeah. Again, which is great, yeah, because it is. I see the logic of that, actually, because there's a fantastic downstairs space that's kind of almost like a duplicate of downstairs, where it can be, if I'm phrasing it correctly, which it can be far better utilised. It's a brilliant idea.
That's right. You know, in terms of the kind of template of the theatre floor plan, it's the same space as downstairs, but it's currently got these three voids in it, which, yeah, you know, eats into the space and makes it difficult to use. I mean, the other big benefit of the work that we're doing is that it will make the theatre much more, I suppose, energy efficient and environmentally friendly. Currently, we have a lot of heat loss through those gaps and through the windows. So we'll be in a position where we're able to actually monitor the heating on both levels, that will have kind of discrete heating controls for both sides of the, for the upper and lower foyer.
Yep. So just by the way, if you would know, the Wellness Cafe usually meets there on a Thursday. They're going to meet in the vestry in Letterkenny Town Park just while these works are ongoing. And if you're looking to secure something from the box office, I can't run through all the days here because there's a lot of days between now and the end of the year. But you can check it out online, I'm sure. Generally speaking, it's open Monday, 9:30 to 5. Really is the rule of thumb, except Saturdays and Sundays. Yeah, pretty much that's when it is, right up until the 21st. Hey, this is it's a pretty narrow closure window for all you're doing.
Yes.
Sweating a bit, no?
The builder's under a lot of pressure and keeps telling me that it's the worst possible time to do things because everybody wants things finished by the end of the year. But it's very difficult for us to find a window to close the theatre because we're, you know, we have over 200 performances a year. We're a very, very busy space. So, yes, we've cleared 6 weeks here in the calendar for the works to happen. So, yeah, quite pressurised.
Brilliant. And an official reopening to look forward to or something along those lines, I'm sure, because it's another thing. All right, Patricia, listen, thanks for that.
Thanks, Greg. Just to say, we are reopening on the 30th of January and it's the Furies farewell tour, so we did not want to miss out on that. So, yeah, we'll be back in business for then.
All right, thanks so very much indeed. I really do appreciate your time. Patricia McBride there, Director of On Green On Theatre in Letterkenny. Closing, or closed yesterday for 6 weeks, and some exciting developments there. It's always nice when things get a facelift or freshened up, I think. And for the creative people out there too, I'm sure it'll be a great advantage for them. A caller says, read the bridge in Letterkenny. The extra bridge in Letterkenny was proposed over 40 years ago, not 20. The planning is complete long ago and should start next year ahead of the 10T roads, then connect it to them. I use the main Letterkenny to Churchill Road several times a day and night. The white lines in the middle of the road are a disgrace. Sporadic lines here and there. With these new car headlights, you need the lines more than ever. The yellow lines in the inside parts are equally as bad. Thanks, Greg. Thanks for your comment. It's appreciated. Yeah, the new lights, every car, and also not just the new lights, but the ones that are stuck in there as well. Very bright indeed. I'm told the crib at the square in Letterkenny usually goes up on the 8th of December. Now, that's just someone throwing a date out there. So that's today, effectively. So it would ordinarily not be there until today. Whether it appears or not, we shall see. Re-footpath, Jack Maury talking about traffic management on the Casey Road. But the road between the Maharan Chur Crossroads and Marion Park has no footpath and services hundreds of houses and yet never gets a mention. Back to the issue of medication. If doctors had a book of all the tablets in it with pictures, it could make it a lot handier to show them what you're taking. There should be a picture book in a dispensary and the doctors. I don't think that would sort of get rid of the fact that some of them look quite similar. And I can see where Tom Murray was coming from in that, you know, if you trusted this book and you thought, well, that looks like the one I'm supposed to be taking, you know, you might take the wrong tablet. So that could become sort of like a full safety net too, because a lot of them look the same and all the manufacturers aren't necessarily going to change all of the machinery to make them all incredibly distinctive too. So it's not a bad idea, but if you introduce it and it still creates confusion, someone's on the hook for that too, which could be probably problematic. On the issue of bikes, I just want to draw attention to a problem we're having at home. Northern Ireland motorbikes flying on the road just outside my door. The noise and the speed they're doing is dangerous to the young kids playing outside, but also upsetting all the livestock on the farm. I see them pass through the sheep in the road and don't even slow down. I reported to the guards, but by the time they get here, they're gone. Shocking behaviour and very dangerous. I don't know where that is or how common that is, but there you go. On the issue of religion in schools, I hope people keep the religion in their homes and place of worship where it belongs, and sure hope it gets out of schools. And the government need I remind people the abuses of the Church of England on this land, and then once they were the abuses of the Catholic Church. Religion, this listener believes, has done nothing but tie this country down and rob it blind for centuries. Back to the road. Speaking of road collisions, I was driving to Strabane last Wednesday and I was on the speed limit of 100 kilometres not far away from Ballyhooly Farm, and a young fella passed me like I was sitting still. He was in a Northern Ireland Reg navy blue Golf GTI and was easily going 150. It was also a solid line on the road approaching a corner. Reducing speed limits will not have any effect on young fellas like that. He'll end up wrapping himself around a tree someday and everyone will be heartbroken about it. But if he continues to drive like an idiot, the inevitable will happen. I hope he slows down and I hope no harm comes from him. But in that situation that you described, it could be a family of six travelling in the opposite direction that he hits and not a tree. And the consequences could be very severe for people other than himself. And, you know, I mean, you can say you're individually responsible for what you do and what might come from that, but not if it impacts on others. Greg, your support for defence and to portray a situation where we should give up our neutrality, giving airtime to help drive the light end of the wedge to help America and Israel for to get us involved in a European army, literally quite opposite of what I said. And what I said would come in, this is exactly what I said would come in. I said that we are portrayed as not a neutral country. I'm not responsible for what Micheál Martin says. I'm not responsible for Micheál Martin cheerleading Europe, or I'm not responsible for Micheál Martin's strong words against Russia whilst he's hosting Vladimir Zelensky. I'm merely observing that clearly we're not neutral, right? So if anyone thinks we have any sense of neutrality politically, we're not neutral. And I actually says we're actually not only just not neutral, we are some of the biggest cheerleaders in Europe now in relation to conflicts, not trying to negotiate peace or facilitate peace, but to send 150 million euro to Ukraine, to be critical of Russia, and so on and so forth. So we are clearly not politically neutral. Also in that conversation, we talked about the fact that we need to have a conversation now so we can talk about things like drone attacks, which will happen. But put in plans, like our expert was saying, that doesn't involve having to get involved in a big fund or a European army or get rid of the triple lock. He gave the perfect example of countries in the north of Europe, some in NATO, some not in Europe, that came together to defend themselves against this type of inevitable attack into the future. So unfortunately, I respect your view, but you only partially listened. And you literally just heard what you wanted to hear and not what I said, or in fact, in fairness to our contributor, what he said either. A recent survey found that 3 in 4 workers believe bullying is a problem in the Irish workplace, while nearly the same proportion say they've witnessed or personally experienced harassment at work. Joanne Foley's recruitment manager at Matrix Recruitment, which commissioned this survey. Joanne talks to us now. Hi, Joanne.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
Good. You know, I think as we have this conversation, and I'll get you to dig in a little bit into the findings, there'll be people will recognise what we're talking about here. You know, I think this type of behaviour, this type of activity is quite common in the workplace. Sometimes it's very obvious and sometimes it's less obvious that it's happening. But I have a feeling this conversation will resonate with many, Joanne.
Yes, indeed. So this survey, it's an annual survey that we carry out here in Matrix Recruitment to understand the real experiences of workers across Ireland. And this year, two key elements of it that stood out to us immediately was the fact of how widespread bullying is in the workplace, and also the worrying increase in the far-right sentiment creeping into some workplaces also.
Yep. So that's what I was going to ask you too. When we talk about sort of bullying or harassment, we do have headlines really under what we're talking about here, the various types.
Yes. So it was quite specific, quite personal and quite serious. So they were very specific in the types of bullying they're experiencing. So they gave examples of things like unfair criticism in front of their colleagues, being humiliated in a meeting, passive-aggressive remarks being made, verbal abuse, being harassed maybe via email or various online apps, and then also physical intimidation. And 50% of those who experienced bullying also said that they experienced sexual harassment in the workplace.
Do we have a breakdown by sex of that harassment, you know, female versus male?
The survey didn't actually look at that, you know, kind of per gender, but it was on a whole that, you know, male and female can both experience bullying.
Of course they can, yeah.
So I think that's important to note that, yeah.
A high rate of people observe it as well. So, I mean, I'm not saying those who witness. Sorry, I'll come back to that in a second. In terms of, you talked about extreme views. I've heard talk about this before, and it's the kind of thing I think they'll probably tell you guys, but might not raise it in the workplace. Almost 50% of people, 46% of people, witnessed a colleague openly promoting extremist or nationalist views.
Yeah, so that was of the quarter of workers then. Who noticed this rise in the far-right sentiment, then that was broken down into, you know, what does that actually mean? What were they actually noticing there that they were, I suppose, considering to be this far-right view? So, you know, almost 60%, in fact, noticed an increase in discriminatory jokes and remarks. And then after that, then there were people, you know, kind of promoting these extremist views as well. Then also it was people, you know, companies nowadays are, you know, rightly putting in diversity and inclusion policies. So people are noticing maybe a little bit of pushback against those this year. And also then the spread of kind of misinformation, conspiracy theories as well. So these were the types of behaviours, I suppose, that were being noticed in the workplace.
What message does a survey like this send or should send to, you know, managers, line managers, CEOs, business owners, small, medium, large, whatever size it might be, because, you know, this is not going to go away without some sort of intervention, I'd imagine. And you need a strong policy in place too, I'd imagine.
Absolutely. The message, I think, to employers from this is very clear. And exactly what you said there, Greg, as well. This applies to all. Our survey was, you know, a nationwide survey. So it applies whether it's rural and urban. You know, this does not just apply, say, to large cities. It doesn't just apply to large companies, SMEs in the regions, it applies to all. And the message to employers is very clear. First of all, you need to make sure that you have, you know, updated policies on bullying, discrimination, all of that, online behaviours, and make sure that your staff read and understand them and that they are actually implemented, that they're not just there, that they're being implemented. There needs to be then as well, you know, a very safe and clear reporting procedure there for people to go through, you know, if they are witnessing any of these types of behaviours and that they need to raise them. And then also, you know, following on from that, that they feel supported if they do raise it. And that was something that did come up, that people said, you know, when they raised the formal complaint, half of those said, almost half, said that they didn't feel supported then after raising the complaint. So that's key. So it really is, I suppose, the ultimate message really is around culture, and that's for management and the leadership team. It trickles down from there. So maybe your management team, maybe they need updating, maybe they need training on this, but it's to create the kind of inclusive, safe environment everybody deserves to work in.
Yeah,
such,
but also too, maybe they're sympathetic to some of the stuff that's going on as well, or particularly I think when it comes to sort of ideology and what have you. So, you know, a company needs to weed that out as well.
Absolutely. It needs to be zero tolerance in the workplace. And you need to make sure that your culture of your organization is safe for all. Because if you don't, first of all, you know, I mean, people will leave. You have 30% of people leaving because they're feeling, you know, bullied or harassed. So, you know, in such a tight labor market, you really don't need, you know, to have such a high turnover rate due to things that can be prevented. So it's very, very important for retention, and it's very important for everybody to feel safe and included and respected in work.
All right, listen, thank you for that. Joanne Foley, Recruitment Manager at Matrix Recruitment. What's your experience in the workplace like? Let me know. 086 60 25,000, or give us a call on 074 91 25,000. Right. Your 5 minute warning now. We are going to be making our first draw for €1,000 very shortly. You do have a window to get in. Go on to our website, highlandradio.com. We are giving €1,000 away today. Then across shows here on Highland Radio for the next 10 working days, in inverted commas. You know what I mean, don't you? And then we're going to give you a, or one of you, we're going to give you a brand new 261 Renault Symbios worth over 35K. That's our main Christmas draw. That's on this show just before Christmas. If you want to be in all 11 draws, get onto the website, highlandradio.com, or give us a call here on 07491 25000. We might have to call you back, right? But we'll ensure that anyone who rings us, we will call you back and make sure you're in that draw before we make that draw. But get on it really, really quickly. Right, James McGuire from Letterkenny joins me on the show now. Hi, James.
Hey, how are you?
Good, good, good to have you with us. Right, now, we are talking about As the Crow Flies documentary. It follows your journey, and it started your journey, that's the focus of this documentary, really, following a very serious incident in Dublin in 2019.
Yeah, so it's not just my journey, sorry. It's a group of lads that kind of went out to France, the six of us. We're part of this team called Team On Again. So it's all the mentality of kind of like do your best together. And then kind of like just a reflection within the documentary is a little bit on kind of why I decided to do the run, why we decided to raise money for men's mental health and kind of decided to kind of like take on this huge challenge as a team. Like,
you went through it medically, didn't you, in 2019?
Yeah, so in 2019, kind of a bit about my story and why I kind of did it with the guys was in 2019, I had a double brain injury, which was also in a bleeding swelling. So to the left side of my brain. And yeah, I just kind of went through months of rehab and everything. So it's amazing now, like 7 years later, I can kind of come on and I'm able to kind of tell a story and be able to take on such a huge challenge.
How did then you hook up with the other guys to take part in this? Like, how did you come across each other?
So the actual event that we took part in is called the Speed Project. So it's an organization of elite runners that kind of wanted to test the narrative of traditional runs. So they kind of wanted to push the limits of endurance and speed. So the race that we did was from Chamonix to Marseille, and it was a 440-kilometer run. And yeah, you kind of had to do it in, as fast as you could as well, which was crazy. And the kind of team came about was a good friend of mine, David Gahan. He's the kind of the captain of Team Man Again, and he reached out, I think it was to anywhere between 50 to 100 accounts, anyone who was related to this, because he really wanted to represent the team and again, their kind of thing of like doing your best together and kind of pushing your limits. And we were fortunate enough then to get a link and we were able to sign up for it. And then he kind of went through a bit of search to see the kind of best runners he could kind of find within who would be up for a huge challenge like this. And yeah, it was me. So the team he kind of put together was, it was David himself, me, James McGuire, with Ben Kringle, Frank Rafferty, Conor McGuire, and Owen Duffy. So we all kind of come from each, all around Ireland, and we all kind of like now living in Dublin, so.
In relation to the documentary and what we'll get to see, I presume, you know, you can't have to show it all, don't you? Yeah, we're talking about a horrific situation for you in 2019 and the fact that you're looking and sounding and feeling great now. There's an awful lot in between, not just for you, but for the other guys as well.
Yeah, it is. It's huge. It's we kind of go to the... Why we chose kind of men's mental health in November to raise money for as well is that the race actually shows a true reflection on that kind of part of recovery, not just testing yourself on a physical level, but the fact that the race, you know, we're running all the way into the night and like we'd only have a couple of minutes sleep during the race as well. So it really tones on you from a mental point of view as well. So to be able to in the documentary, we really kind of show this and highlight it. Each one of us have our own kind of stories. We have like our own kind of like hero moments in the documentary. The lads do amazing. And then the two guys that kind of put the whole documentary together and film this was Joe Langren and Harry O'Toole. And what they were able to capture and the story they told was just amazing.
And it is amazing and it's great. A fantastic achievement. I have still no idea why people put themselves through this. But I suppose, as it turns out, it's for our entertainment and their own personal journey. But still, you know, it's mad. Whilst you're very conscious of you know, the mental health element of it and raising awareness, and also too, I'm sure we'll hear plenty about your gratitude to Bowman staff, because you know you defied their expectations, and on reflection, they've probably defied those around you and their expectations in getting you back together to be, you know, as you are now, in such great form.
Yeah, like in terms of being able to put great work with Beaumont. I worked on a few fundraisers with them. One in particular that we worked on was one called the Kitchen of Hope. So it was great. We were able to put together a cooking demonstration that raised money. And it was actually my uncle, who's a chef on TV, Nevin Maguire, who's able to support that too and able to bring awareness and raise money towards us. And yeah, going back to your point there, the Beaumont staff, the staff there in Beaumont, I sing their praises anytime anyone says anything about my accent or asks me about it. Without them, I wouldn't be in the kind of position I am today and be able to do what I can do, being able to live a life of complete normality after the accident that I went through.
Yeah. Now, the documentary has been released on YouTube, and what I'd suggest people do is, you know, it's great if you can watch things on your phone and stuff, but get it up on your smart TV or your Fire Stick. You might have that. Open the app and watch it as it was meant to be watched as well, because it's a remarkable story with our own local interest here in James Maguire. And if you enjoy it, or even if you don't watch it, you can donate as well too. And we have that link. It's a Movember link. We're going to link that on our Facebook page as well to make it as easy as possible. But throw it up on your bigger screen there and get the full experience. What was it like watching it back, James, for you? Because obviously, you know, this was your lived experience, but also, you know, I presume there comes a point whereby you don't necessarily notice the cameras all of the time either, right? So watching this back, you know, what made the cut, what was left on the floor, what was it like for you?
Yeah, kind of, as you said there, watching back on it yesterday. So we did a private premiere just for friends and family in Dublin. And watching it there with my family, being able to see a lot of it reflected on my experience through my accident and coming back into running. Like after my accident, I had to learn how to walk and speak again. It was a real reset for me. So being able to see the accomplishments that we did as a team, to have the guys there just in huge support of me within each other as the team. And again, like you see like six lads who were like, some of us didn't even meet each other before we started training for this, come together, and now we're like incredible friends. I can't speak highly of them. I think they're so amazing, and the fact that how we were able to come together and achieve such an incredible result, it all shows this within the documentary. And I would like anyone who, not even an interest in running, you don't even need to have an interest in running to watch it. It's such a great documentary on just community and spirit within a group of guys.
And I mean, obviously there's that collective journey. I'm just curious, yeah, in you completed the Dublin Marathon, the Dublin City Marathon yourself, yes, in October. Crossing the finishing line there, was that almost like the culmination of your personal journey, having to learn to walk again, learn to run again, but then off your own steam to take on one of the biggest challenges you can take on in the mainstream? How significant was that day for you, crossing the finishing line in October?
It was a day of a lot of emotion. I had me family and I had a lot of friends that came down to support. I'm part of an incredible run group here in Dublin called Mild Activity, and they were able to support everyone going. For me personally, being able to go through, I set a huge goal out for myself halfway through the year of trying to go for a sub 3 hour marathon for my first marathon. And it was a lot of training, a lot of dedication, but I just knew through what I came through and what I'm capable of myself, I was like, I can do it. And I was so fortunate to cross the finish line at 2 hours and 55 minutes.
That's ridiculous.
That's what I got. So I got my sub three.
That's absolutely ridiculous. Well done. In a great way, right? But I was setting that up whereby finishing the marathon was the achievement, not doing it in under 3 blooming hours. But anyway, listen, obviously you're made of something special. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
We look forward to watching it. It's the documentary out now. It's As the Crow Flies.
It's out this evening at 7:30.
Oh, you got the premiere, right? Okay. And it's on the Team and Again YouTube channel. I'm writing that.
Yeah, so if you just search Team and Again, there's no spaces there on YouTube. Also, if they want to go on to our social media on Instagram, so it's just the exact same. So it's Team and Again on Instagram. There's plenty of footage there, and there'll be plenty of like notifications to let people know when the documentary's live.
Well done to you. Thanks so much for joining us. It's been lovely talking to you. Look after yourself. That's James Maguire from Letterkenny's parents from Illestrin. He's living in Dublin now, but he came through an awful injury in 2019, defied the medical odds, and also, I suppose, in terms of his performance on the road, defied the odds, more generally speaking. Okay, if you want to watch the draw for €1,000, David James is in studio with us. Sean will be joining us shortly. Get in on right now. Go to YouTube, Highland Radio Ireland, or on our Facebook pages, and you can see live if you are the winner. That's all coming up really shortly. MEP Kieran Mullooly, an independent, joins me on the programme now. Good morning, Kieran. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg. Good morning to you and your listeners.
Right, you are part of a group of cross-party and non-party Irish MEPs issuing a joint statement to the Irish government welcoming the GEA's work on demographic change and calling for coordinated national action to tackle rural depopulation. So break that down for me. What does that mean?
Greg, what this is centred on is depopulation. So many of your listeners are involved in GAA clubs in County Donegal, or indeed maybe involved in school managements and parents' committees. And you've seen the way population figures have gone down dramatically on the West Coast in recent times. The irony is, of course, that the population has gone up on the East Coast, particularly closer to Dublin. But in areas like Donegal, there have been many, many communities that have struggled with regard to football teams, fielding a team, perhaps even holding on to teachers at national school level, losing them in various situations. And the GAA has come together now at national level to try and put forward an initiative on this. I have to compliment them. They have a good demographics officer there in Donegal, Micheál Murphy. I presume it's not the footballer, but it is Micheál Murphy, who's in charge. But he's been doing with his colleagues in Croke Park. He's trying to get a national initiative from the government, from the GAA itself, and indeed from the European Parliament. So we're all on the one page in terms of planning for the future and supporting communities to try and hold on to population.
Does our national development plan really align with that, though? Because there is a sense that it's designed to, almost some would argue, depopulate rural areas in terms of planning, in terms of investment, in terms of regional investment. You know, this sounds to me like it could be a bit of a talking shop if we don't actually recognise nationally that the National Development Plan really is promoting the depopulation rather than encouraging population growth in rural areas.
I think you've hit it on the nail, Greg. You're spot on. One of the issues we've called for is for the government of Ireland to rural-proof its policy for the future. What does that mean? That means effectively that when it comes to planning, when it comes to deciding we're going to have decentralisation in the future of government departments, that we take it seriously and we pick locations on the Western Seaboard that need government departments that need repopulation, and that's something that has to be part of government policy. And you're quite right about housing in particular is a key area here. The government has just published a new initiative on housing. There's a new one coming from the European Parliament on the 16th of December. But I'd be one of the people who's been saying it means nothing unless it provides planning guidelines and support for people to be able to build their homes on the Western Seaboard, and particularly in rural areas where farmers own their own land and family members are being denied planning permission in some cases. So we need a sea change in attitude towards that, and we're going to support people, because that's the only way we're going to keep people at home. That's the only way we're going to get to 14 or 15 players on the team, if we're able to hold on to them in the local area, local community. And that's why we're calling on the Irish government to do that. But you know what also, Greg, there's another issue here for the GAA itself. We've been speaking to the GAA, and sometimes they're quite passive. They say, we run the hurling and the football, it's not our job to do this. Well, MEPs as a group of us have put it to them that it actually is your job to engage at local level. We're saying to Donegal GAA, for instance, that you should be part of the PPN, the Public Participation Network in the county. You should be in there on the housing SPC at the county council level. You should be one of the policy makers, not just somebody standing by and complaining afterwards that houses weren't built in a parish or houses weren't built in a particular area. So it works both ways. Right. And I think the GAA are now prepared to move on that.
Yeah, we'll watch on with interest. Kieran, thank you very much for your time. That's MEP Kieran Mullally. Waiting with bated breath to see David James, because that means the draw's coming. But also, it's David. How are you, David?
Morning, Greg. Good. How are you?
Doing fantastic. Before we get down to it, because you've been drafted in to do the draw, right?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So we're not wrong, Mike. So we're going to be doing. We're going to be giving away €1,000 very, very shortly. Before I do, though, a mention of the big event tomorrow night. It's Highland Radio's Christmas concert at the Mount Argyll Hotel on Tuesday, the 9th of December. Now, obviously, we've all been keeping an eye on the weather forecast, and there are weather wind warnings in place, but they lapse well before the concert too, which is good. So it should be relatively dry and relatively calm by the time the doors open at 7 p.m. What's the show looking like?
Yeah, it's looking like a festive cracker, Greg, and delighted to be joined tomorrow night by so many of our great friends from the Irish country music family. We've got Derek Ryan joining us. We've got Mike Denver joining us. We've got Jerry Guthrie, Keith and Lorraine McDonald from the Show Band Show, and a fantastic tenor by the name of Des Willoughby. Des comes from County Waterford. He actually sang at our new employee Danny O'Carroll's dad's wedding. Okay. So there you go. He's a fine, fine singer. And tomorrow night is set to be a great show. A lovely variety in the music that's going to be played over the few hours, and a huge crowd coming as well. And I think there's a handful of tickets remaining. If you want to come and join us, I would advise you to get them today. They probably won't be available tomorrow. You can get them from our website, highlandradio.com, or from the Mount Argyll reception.
We lots of people would have their favourites. You know, you mentioned Derek Ryan, Mike Denver, and the rest. There's something like that's fantastic too, but it is maybe people hadn't had an opportunity to see a tenor live, right?
Exactly.
There's something very, very special about that.
Especially at this time of year, Greg. You know, whenever you think about the great Christmas songs that can be delivered by a tenor, you know, like Oh Holy Night and all those types of things. So I think for the time of year that it is, I think Des is going to be such a fantastic addition to the roster.
Yeah, indeed. So tomorrow night, David James and band, Derek Ryan, Mike Denver, Jerry Guthrie, Keith and Lorraine McDonald, Des Willoughby, and you. Tickets are available. A very limited number of tickets are available. You can get onto our website, highlandradio.com. Are they still available from the reception at the Mount Argyll?
There's a few down there. Okay. And just to remind people, although Highland concerts traditionally used to start at 8:30, this starts at 8 o'clock on the button. We started at 8 o'clock back in March for our birthday bash, and tomorrow night's the same, 8 o'clock sharp.
Right, are you ready to give someone a grand?
Absolutely, that's right, the best part of it all.
Go up and have a look, right? We've got a special camera here because we just don't know if David James is a diddler yet, you know. Yeah. But I can see that his sleeves are completely clear.
And I'll just show the camera.
Yeah. right, so listen, that thing's been spun many, many times, and David's given another couple of turns as well. Right, David, in you go.
All right. Digging
in deep, he's wiggling around, and he is pulling
the
out
ticket
a ticket.
Number is 9260.
9260. 9260. Okay, sit down there with that ticket now. 92. Just let's just absolutely double check. 9260. 0.
Yeah,
someone has there. Just won a grand.
Do you know the way we're giving away a Reynolds Symbioz?
Mm-hmm.
Well, whenever I was young, I used to think that Reynolds were made in Rafo. Because you know
Reynolds of Rafo.
You know the Reynolds of Rafo. I swear to God. So
there's bound to be other things like that. Actually,
well,
I've come unstuck with something like that before. Reynolds of Rafo.
Well, another thing that I used to do was whenever we were driving through Bridge End, I was always looking around saying, where's all the bicycles? There are 9 million bicycles in Bridge End. Oh, God.
That's almost like a misheard lyrics feature, isn't it? Okay. Right. Now, is there a telephone line number here? No? Okay, we're going to just see what the crack is. We do have a name.
Okay.
And that person has one. They don't have to come on with us, but it wouldn't be nice if we could reveal the news live on air.
It'd be lovely to get them on and lovely to give somebody €1,000, especially in the month of Christmas.
Right, so Renault aren't made in Rafo, but you can get your you can get your bum in the front seat or back seat or wherever of one still, by the way, because we've done one draw. There's still 9 1,000s to give away. You're giving yours away on Wednesday, is it?
I think it's Wednesday, yeah. Wednesday. So €1,000 every day for the next 2 weeks, Monday to Friday. Working days, as we'd call them.
Every time I say that, and you know, because you work weekends as a musician, right? Every time I say that, people say, I work Saturday and Sunday, I'm on Tuesday off, and I write to. Is Abby there? Hi, Abby.
Hello,
Anne, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi, this is Greg at Highland Radio with David James here. Do you know David James?
Just to see.
Hello, Anne.
No, just to see.
How are you?
It's good to have you with us. Anne, did you buy a ticket for Highland Radio's big Christmas draw?
I did, yes.
Okay, well, David, we've some good news, haven't we?
And we've got some great news for you because you are the first winner of our €1,000 a day giveaway. Congratulations, Anne.
Well, thanks very much. Thanks very much.
So that's €1,000 in your back pocket heading into Christmas, Anne. Happy days.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. What are you going to spend it on? Anything nice for yourself? Don't say home heating oil.
I think it was in Abby's name.
Yes, okay. Well, you're very honest because I didn't say that. So who's Abby?
Abby's my granddaughter.
And how old's Abby?
Abby's 20.
Oh, right, okay. Wow, that's fantastic. That could be almost her year's car insurance for her there. So you're going to give her the grand?
Oh, yes, it's her name, so she'll get it.
Oh, well done to you. I hope she looks after you now too, but I have a feeling that Granny looks after all her granny and her grandchildren and all that kind of stuff. Well, that's absolutely lovely, Anne.
Yeah, right. Thanks very much.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, Anne.
Right, thank you.
And pass on our best wishes to Abby. I'll be honest with you, I would have probably put the boys' names down, but if I had got a call, I don't think in that moment I could give them the 1,000. I think I'm going to have to pocket
You'd be greedy.
Well,
in fairness, Greg, it'll be hard for you to answer the call and chat to yourself on the radio.
You'd be surprised. I answered a scam call a little earlier on.
Did you?
Yes.
Class. That's lovely and well done. And of course, that ticket will go back into the draw now.
Yes, let's do it now.
Imagine Abby wins again tomorrow. Yeah, wouldn't that be some crack?
This is Sean Quinn's angle. He's convinced someone's going to win twice in a row. But anyway, it could happen. There's absolutely no doubt. Anne's back in, or Abby is back in there.
Great.
Anne's could come out, actually. Do you know what? It's much less likely, if people have bought 5 tickets, it's much less unlikely, for a double winner, actually. I often think of it singularly. Right, okay. Very, very exciting. Well done to you, Anne. Well done to you, Abby. That's Anne McIver I was chatting to. 9260 was today's lucky winning ticket. There's another €1,000 to give away tomorrow, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, and then the 5 days following Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And then you can also be in with a chance of winning that fantastic car.
That's not made in Rafo.
That's not made in Rafo, but the people of Rafo are industrious. They could make it, but just on this occasion, Reynolds are too busy doing other great stuff, right?
Absolutely.
Right, and just to remind you one more time that the weather warnings that are in place tomorrow will have lapsed completely in time for our fantastic Christmas concert in the Mount Errigal Hotel. There are limited tickets still available, but effectively it is a packed house. Don't worry about that. You can go onto our website, highlandradio.com, give us a call here, or indeed the Mount Errigal Hotel reception. And it's an 8 o'clock sharp start. This is the new era. So things kick off. But you know what? People get home or
in early, out early. And, you know, people are working the next day or whatever. They're still home and lots of the time. The concert will be over probably around 10:45 or so.
All right. And just to let you know, in relation to the car draw, lines are open again. There's 9 cash draws remaining. And of course, that car, buy online or call 074-91-25000. What's the crack with, just while I have a minute, with Cavan in February?
Yeah. Cavan is booking up really fast and that's looking like it's going to be a sellout again. So that is February.
And what goes on?
What we do is we leave here on the bank holiday Monday, which I think is the 2nd of February. Am I right in saying that? We leave here via our luxury coaches and we head down to the beautiful Slieve Russell. We get there, we stay for 3 nights. We give everyone their bed, their breakfast and their evening meal, and the food down there is first class. And then we have a lot of entertainment over the course of the 3 days.
Is this like, say for instance, if people don't like flying, right? You know, the different events that happen in around the pool and all that kind of stuff, right? Is this like one far enough away that it feels like a trip, right? But close enough to home if you don't like flying.
1,000%.
It's the same kind of buzz, is it?
Yeah, hit the nail on the head. And because it's the Slieve Russell, it's such a nice hotel that it feels like you're away on a proper break. And that's exactly what it is. You know, we get there, we check in, we have our first evening meal, and then we have a dance on the first night. I'll be there with my band. And then we'll have late night entertainment in the bar. The next day, we'll do something in the afternoon. We're not 100% sure what we'll do yet. And then we'll have a nice concert that night. And we'll have Dominic Kerwin, John McNichol, Owen Mack, Louise Morrissey. And there's lots more that I know I'm missing.
Trevor Lochray, Jimmy Buckley, Matt Levy, Lightning.
Yep. Then on the final day, then what we're going to have, this is our first time to do this, we're going to have our gala evening meal.
Naked.
A nice gala dinner, completely in the nip.
Yeah, and that's a fantastic initiative.
You very kindly offered to be special guest.
Chief star.
And then, it's going to be a great few days.
Right. Okay, so again, you get that full experience that your friends have told you about, but if you don't like flying or if you feel like being closer to home, you have it all there. Yeah. Right, thanks, David.
Thanks, Greg.
You're on air later. Look forward to that. Yeah. We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9.